I am Randy Andrews, and today I'll be talking about Ice Pirates from 1984. I'll talk about the cast, the background, the comedic aspect, and of course, the soundtrack. All today on Soundtrack Alley. So today, I'm talking about Ice Pirates from 1984. Let's get into a little bit on the story and the characters.
At last, the space comedy you didn't know you were waiting to see. The Ice Pirates. In the far distant future, in a galaxy where those in the know don't go, real estate is cheap, and they've got great sushi. But there's no water.
You got any water?
It is a time when desperate men will swing from the chandeliers.
Pirates, sound the alarm!
Just to get a drink.
Just take a look at that.
Good men like Jason, space pirate and explorer of the cosmos. His chief engineer and fellow rogue Roscoe.
Oh, you quit that.
And the beautiful Princess Karina. One tiny band who must bust their buns, battling the masters of all the water in the galaxy. The evil Mithradoids, famous for not being nice.
Killing you would be too easy. I have something better in mind.
The Ice Pirates.
Let's party!
See startling special effects. See depravity in zero gravity. See glamour girls from another galaxy. See kung fu robots. And delight in the mysteries of the seventh world. The one place in the universe to get a decent glass of water.
Don't do that.
Insist.
How's it going?
The Ice Pirates. A totally spaced adventure.
Ice Pirates is from, of course, 1984, and it was a comedic science fiction film that was directed by Stuart Raphael, who co-wrote with the screenplay from Krall, writer Stanford Sherman. The film stars Robert Ulrich, Mary Crosby, Michael D. Roberts, and other featured actors are Angelica Houston, that many people don't know that is actually in the film because she's done up. And then also Ron Perlman is in this movie, along with Bruce Valanche, John Carradine, and former football player John Matsuzak. The film takes place in a distant future where water is so scarce and rationed that it's considered an immensely valuable substance, like as a commodity and as currency with the ice cubes. The Templars of Mithra control the water, and they destroyed worlds that had natural water, leaving the galaxy virtually dry. These pirates dedicate their lives to raiding ships and looting the ice from the cargo holds to make a living. And it's really, really tongue-in-cheek with their whole outfits because they're very pirate-like. They are on spaceships, but they carry a scabbard and swords, and they have boots, and they use guns, and it's just hilarity ensues with all these varieties of takes on actual pirates. Now, Jason is the leader, and he's played as Robert Ulrich, and he's the leader of this band of pirates that raid a Templar cruiser for its ice, but then they discover a beautiful princess who's Mary Crosby and is in a stasis pod. She is drop-dead gorgeous in this movie. It was at the top of her career as well. Now, Jason decides to kidnap her and wake her up, and it alarms the Templars. And so Jason and his pirates flee, and then they are pursued by Templar ships. And so at that point, we get the real action of the story to find out what's going on and where they're going and what the Seventh World really is. Now, with this character as Princess Karina, she's a spoiled person, but she hires Jason to find her father. Now, with all this, it's really a lot of great, great special effects with these robots that are very practical in effects, and some of them are people that are made up behind the scenes with the robot parts, and it's really, really funny. So let's get into some of the reception on the film.
Robots, attack!
Of course, having the film be tongue-in-cheek, it's often been compared to Star Wars. Upon its release, the New York Times described it as a busy, bewildering, exceedingly jokey science fiction film that looks like a Star Wars spinoff made in an underdeveloped galaxy. The film is also noteworthy for its cheeky, obviously cut-rate production values, as well as mid-80s colorblind casting. It has a sexual frankness to it and nearly deliberate, slack sitcom direction. The climactic time warp battle is a rare example of the classic science fiction temporal paradox done in a real-time context. It holds a 9% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but in my own heart, it has a 80% rating because I love it so much. Even though it's so cheesy and cliche, it's just a fun movie to be had. And you get to enjoy it as one of those movies in the 80s. Now, it's ironic, but Kevin Costner was actually turned down for the role of Jason. According to a crew member, the entire sound team was fired mid-production and replaced without explanation. Now, that's kind of odd, too. There's one scene after the pirates are captured and the spaceship is approaching a doomed city for landing. This is the same doomed city that is used in the set for the movie Logan's Run. Now, in the control room where an alarm is triggered, there's television screens that are showing the movie Rollerball from 1975. This movie is one of the two movies that Stuart Raphael directed, both science fiction and fantasy, and they were both released in 1984. The one was the Philadelphia Experiment, and The Ice Pirates was the second. One of the final major studio films of this production was John Carradine. He didn't have many roles after this. John Matuszak, or his character name known as Killjoy, later on went on to star as Sloth in The Goonies, which is a similarly pirate-themed treasure movie. The movie influence is actually behind with the men's hockey team known as the Ice Pirates in Rochester, New York. This is also the second cinema movie of both actor Ron Perlman and actress Mary Crosby. Now, what's really unique is that Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, once jokingly said that Ice Pirates was singularly responsible for bringing back the death penalty to California, which is kind of funny. And what's really great, though, is it actually sets up a really fun premise for the film and gives you this end-of-the-world type scenario. Because in the prologue, it reads, "Long after the great interplanetary wars, the galaxy has gone dry. Water has become the only thing left of value, and evil Templars from the planet Mithra have gained control of this life-giving source. Their power is now absolute, except for a few rebel pirates who survived by stealing ice from the great Templar ships." Now, with certain cameos that presented itself in the film, one of them was Max von Sydow, one of the bounty hunters in the desert. And this is one thing that I really like about the film, is even though you have these science fiction elements, you have this grittiness to the film that makes it more real. And with the desert scene, where they go to talk to a man that actually survived this time warp, he's old and decrepit, and he's in a wheelchair, and he can't really move very fast. But he talks about the elements of the seventh world and how important it is and what it is. And ironically, everyone can figure out where the seventh world really is. It's actually Earth. And there's some of these quotes that are just utterly hilarious, because one of the characters, who's known as Roscoe, Jason goes to him, and he's looking at this robot that Roscoe made, and he said, "Why'd you make him black?" And Roscoe says, "Because I wanted him to be perfect." And Roscoe uses this robot throughout the film, and the robot actually saves the day several times.
What's that? Buford. Buford?
Buford,
yeah. I just rebuilt him. Ah, looks good. His motor system is 0.01 milliseconds faster than the finest Omega built.
I don't mean anything by this, but is there any particular reason why he's black?
Sure. I wanted him to be perfect.
And one of the practical effects that is really fun to look at is the little character known as a space herpy. He's like a little creature that goes from room to room, and they think he's some horrible little creature, but yet he's really just feeding on food, and he's just kind of a parasite that is invading the ship, and it's kind of a nod to Alien.
What?
You put that on me?
What?
That thing.
What thing? What the hell are you talking about?
Something jumped on me when I was sleeping.
What's it on your back?
What's on my back?
Your back. There's blood on your back.
What?
Blood. There's blood on your back.
Hey, one of the... Help me move this thing.
What was it?
I don't know what it was.
You sure you didn't put that on me?
I didn't put anything.
What is that? Come and get this!
What
the hell was that? I don't know.
Must have come out of this thing here.
Got a 25 A.
Ooh.
Where'd this come from?
The top. I remember seeing it fall out of the box at the closet.
The manifest. Box.
B-28.
Okay, here we go. 25, 26, 27, B-28. Oh, no. What is
it?
Space
herpy.
Herp? Dormant form. Keep away from heat and moisture.
Extremely dangerous when activated. Antibody. Oh boy. Unknown.
Oh great.
So, next, I'd like to talk a little bit about how MGM was using this to have it be best understood as the Ice Pirates falling between Star Wars and Spaceballs. And it was on a budget from Battle Beyond the Stars. Now, what I like about it is that science fiction adventures flourish in these years. And with Ice Pirates, you get this sense of fun, and it winks at these different influences and time travel and these funny scenes that are actually put forth in the movie that make it so much better. There's not a lot of information that I've been able to draw from this actual movie, but I love the score, and I think it's such a great movie that I wanted to really highlight this movie in my genre of films that I wanted to put on my podcast. Now, I know this episode will not be very long. This episode is mainly just talking about the wonderful fun that you can have with the film. There's one scene where Angelica Houston is in this bar, and there's these giant thugs that come up to their table, and she single-handedly fights all of them off and even cuts off the head of one of them. So you can see that even in the 80s, they still had this grittiness, and this film was rated PG. So it's in that in-between stage of between PG and R, and so it should have been classified as PG-13. Another scene that really gets to me that is actually brilliantly done is the scene where they are making love, Jason and the princess. They're in this chamber called an environmental chamber, and the program that Jason has is called Passion Storm. And what it does is actually simulates real weather inside this chamber to where they actually get wet and are rained upon, and there's thunder and lightning. But the effect of the lightning, of course, is not lethal. But it creates a better effect for the film. And it gives you that sense of awe and love and romantic bonding. And it just makes for a better film. And then also, one thing that I always have found with the practical effects of the movie is the time warp sequence of where they're traveling to the seventh world and they have to go through time warp to get there. Now, every few minutes, you'll hear this sound, and it signifies the time warp moving them faster. And you'll see them walk faster, and all they've done is really speed up the film to show that they're going faster through this time warp. And as it gets further and further into the time warp, they start aging really fast. And at one point, Jason and the princess have a baby, and he grows up, and he's fighting the bad guys just as they're standing there, and they're all old, and they have like these huge long beards, and it's just so much fun. And then all of a sudden, within like a flash, you see them back, reverted to normal. And it's just an effective way of bringing out this amazing, fun, fantastic movie. Now, Bruce Broughton, he was the composer. And one year before exploding on the feature scene with, say, young Sherlock Holmes and Silverado, he brought in the score to the Ice Pirates, and it shifts between a blend of Korn Goldisk fanfares and exciting action music, which bring in like this brass and woodwinds and driving 80s pop rock percussion and keyboards, and a haunting electronic love theme. Now, the film benefited from a strong thematic approach and Broughton's consummate skill. The main theme is darn catchy, and it's really a lot of fun. It's faced with limited resources. Broughton devised an orchestra that consisted primarily of brass, winds, and pop rock rhythm section. Now, with this pop rock rhythm section, you get these guitars in there, and it makes the effects of the sounds so much more alive. And it's in order to give the music as much heft as possible while capturing the film's wild shifts in tone from adventure to comedy. And so it's just a lot of fun, and I've enjoyed it immensely. And so the cues I've got for us today are a blend of rock and jazz, as well as some orchestral form. So the first cues I'll be playing are the prologue, the main title, Take Care, and A Real Princess, Raid for Ice. The score is very jazzy and fun, even with everything having a gritty feel that Bruce Broughton brings into the score. Now, more of the score later on actually has an orchestral feel. So now I'll play those cues.
We'll be right back.
Next, I've got Rock and Roll Party Number 1, Motorbike Chase, Rock and Roll Party Number 2, Pirate's Den, and Sweetwater. Now, Sweetwater is the place where they find this old man that survived the time warp. And Sweetwater is this desolate, dry area, and it's filled with these lovable little creatures that pop their heads up, kind of like prairie dogs, only it's like whack-a-mole. And it's so much fun. These cues really show the rock nature of the score and still show the playfulness in the music that Bruce brings across to us. So now I'll play that.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
So sadly, we come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I hope you all have enjoyed what I've shared today, and I hope it's been engaging for you. The last cues I'll be playing are Rock and Roll Number 3, The Pleasure Room, Passion Storm, The Seventh World and Big Battle, and lastly, Out of Business and End Credits. Like I've brought out before, Passion Storm really highlights Bruce Broughton's ability to bring out an orchestral part of the score and still maintain that rock, pop rock, classic guitar in the music. This is one of those scores that really focus on guitar, much like The Princess Bride did. Now, I'll be bringing out The Princess Bride in a future episode. Today, I'd like to thank Jillian Orwell for the excellent intro that she's brought to my show. And then you can find me at SoundtrackAlley.net, SoundtrackAlley.podbean.com. On Twitter, it's RandallAndrews1. And you can email me at SoundtrackAlley@yahoo.com. So until next time, see you later, and happy listening. We'll be right back. thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take some time to review my podcast on iTunes and also listen to it on Podbean. And if you leave a review or rating on there, it'll help us get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.